Happy St. Patrick's Day and welcome into the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside my two co-hosts and Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 27, the Zaza Pachulia episode. And one-time NBA champion with the Golden State Warriors and also a guy that led to some rule changes in the NBA. So today we're going to honor Zaza with number 27. And with that, we'll get right into our opening tip with you, Bruce.
Well, I just want to say that I'm rocking the green, not so much to honor my Boston Celtics, but in honor of St. Patty's Day. For my opening tip, Wednesday night, another tough night for the refs around the league. Issue number one, the sixth foul on Joel Embiid versus Cleveland being overturned upon review. Evan Mobley did a good job selling it, but it did appear Embiid shoved him with his right arm and sent him flying. Philly was up by 7 at the time with just over 4 minutes left in the game. So that could have had a major significance towards the outcome. More egregious was the very questionable officiating in the Celtics-Timberwolves game. There were a number of bad whistles against Minnesota, but in the final seconds, Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla ran out on the court trying to call timeout after Grant Williams grabbed a loose ball and didn't get teed up. Why Grant didn't call the timeout, I don't know. One could argue that if the refs had seen Mazzulla call timeout before he had to run out on the court to get their attention, he would have never done it. That said, that might have been another mistake by the refs on their part. However, then the refs allowed Williams to steal a jump ball against Rudy Gobert, which sealed the win for Boston. The refs handed this game to Boston, and Minnesota has a right to be angry. It's become a near-nightly occurrence that game officials are in the spotlight. The refs do a solid job most of the time, but they're not perfect, and when they make a bad call near the end of a game, at this point in the schedule, their mistakes can have a huge effect on a team's entire season.
World B, what do you have for an opening tip?
Well, I wanted to point out, we don't talk about them nearly enough for obvious reasons, but the Rockets, Pistons, and Spurs all have some things in common. They all have 50-plus losses on the season, and combined they're over 100 games under 500. They're all in a battle for the number one overall seed in next summer's draft. But all three have this in common. They continue to play hard. I mean, the Rockets have wins over the Celtics and Lakers this week. The Pistons defeated the Pacers back on Monday, really putting a damper on their playoff chase. And the Spurs came into Thursday 4-4 in their last 8 games with wins over the Jazz, the Pacers, and the Nuggets. And they went to overtime on Wednesday before losing to Dallas. So it's just a reminder. We talked about it on our podcast on Tuesday. But this whole idea of tanking, that's an organizational thing. That's a front office thing. Because when the guys go out on the court, or the coaches are, taking the lineup out there, it's all about trying to win for them. They have pride in doing the job on the court. So we hear all the tanking stuff. Just remember, the players aren't the ones that are trying to tank this season. That's the front office. That's the GM. That's the owner. The players are still giving it their all. And you can see how it is this last couple of weeks.
I agree with you there. And as for my opening tip, I'm going to go to the flip side here at the top of the league and give a shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks as they became the first team to 50 wins on the year and have also officially clinched a playoff spot, doing so in pretty impressive fashion, defeating both the Sacramento Kings and Phoenix Suns on the road in a back-to-back. Giannis scored 46 in each of those games. And I think it's worth noting that this team is really starting to find their stride with or without Chris Middleton available. Middleton did score 30-plus for the first time this season in Sacramento to start that back-to-back set. But then the Bucks handed business to Phoenix without Middleton the next night. The Bucks now hold a 2.5-game lead atop the East. And games left on their schedule include the Spurs, Jazz, Pistons, and Pacers. So seems like the Milwaukee Bucks have that number one spot all wrapped up in the Eastern Conference. And with that, that segues nicely into our first quarter here. And I want to discuss that number two seed out East between Boston, 5-5 in their last 10, and Philly, 7-3 in their last 10, battling for that second spot. And Bruce, you being our Celtics fan here on the show, let's start with you. What are you thinking of this battle out east for the second spot?
Well, right now, I mean, it's very frustrating watching the Celtics. You know, they're not peaking at the right time. I mean, this is the time of year when a championship team is supposed to have their act together and start winning the games they're supposed to win, taking care of their business, beating up on poor teams, and, you know, just basically showing, that championship medal. As I said in my opening comment, they lucked into a win at Minnesota on Wednesday, and they're just in this depressing, familiar pattern. They get a lead. They start feeling pretty good. They take their foot off the gas. They let teams back into the game. And then before you know it, they're in a dogfight at the end. Their starters have to play more minutes as a result. And they just, you know, they just have this bad mojo working right now. I know that a lot of their problems probably have to do with the fact that Robert Williams has been out, and they're saying he could return in about a week or so. But it's like he hasn't played since March 3rd. They're only 3-3 since he's been out. And speaking of depressingly familiar patterns, he's always hurt. So they always have to know in the back of their mind that, you know, okay, when he's in there, they're great. But what happens when he gets hurt, which he's almost approaching Anthony Davis country here, where almost, you know, every year he's going to miss a bunch of games. So I got to admit, I'm very concerned that they're going to slip into third.
World B, what's your concern level with the Boston Celtics right now?
They're just a blah team right now. They're just an average spot, just 6-5 since the break. Their offensive efficiency, their defensive efficiency, it's in the middle of the pack. Tatum's had back-to-back poor games shooting from the field. He came up with 22 in each game, but it wasn't really going to be 2-for-18 combined on threes. That's really tough to – your best player, you know, when you're struggling, your best player needs to get you out of it. They only have, you know, of their last 12 games, they only have three against the quote-unquote elite of the league, that being Sacramento, Milwaukee, and Philly. But they all are on the road. So, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from Boston right now. I don't know if they're taking the foot off the gas or whatever, or they're just playing blah. Everything, their defense is blah, their offense is blah. There's nothing – you know, if at the beginning of the year, their offense was the best we were talking about potentially of all time in terms of efficiency, and that's really tapered off now. They're not even second. They're third behind Sacramento and Philly. So it's just they're in a blah state right now, and they can get out of it, but they got to play better at both ends.
I think my biggest concern comes back to something you said, Bruce, and it starts with Robert Williams and his health. I think that's been a huge disappointment this season and something that, you know, is continuing to affect them. I mean, you look at the other teams in the East, you've got Milwaukee Bucks. Brook Lopez is having a hell of a year for the Milwaukee Bucks, not to mention they can play small ball five with Giannis. You look at Philly, they've got an MVP candidate in Joel Embiid. Cleveland, they've got Jared Allen, Evan Mobley. New York, Julius Randle would give you guys fits. I mean, you don't have a guy that can really stay in front of him. Miami's got a guy like Nick Claxton, who I think the Celtics would hope they could get that type of production from Time Lord himself. And then you look at 7-8, you got, you know, Miami that has Bam Adebayo, probably the best defensive center in the league. I just think that not having that five spot secured is really starting to show, especially as the games, as we've talked about, have kind of shifted. The intensity level's been turned up. The defense has gotten better. And without Time Lord on the floor, it really hurts. It really hurts Boston's chances.
A lot of us felt that, you know, their biggest need going into the trade deadline was to get a reliable big that could come in and yep. play some minutes. And I think that, you know, right now they're – I mean, look, when it comes to dealing with somebody like Giannis, they might actually have a couple guys that can challenge him a little bit. I mean, Grant Williams has at times been pretty good bodying up on him. And as I mentioned in my opening comment in our previous show, Blake Griffin's actually been giving them some decent minutes, and he's probably somebody that can use his six fouls against Giannis. But here's another issue that I'm a little bit concerned about. We know the team got off to a blazing start under rookie coach Joe Mazzulla. He had the interim label removed just before the All-Star break. And now that the Celtics are in the stretch run, some Boston fans are wondering, is he up to the task of getting this team back on track? He's, you know, in the playoffs, coaching plays such a much bigger role than it does in the regular season. And he's pretty inexperienced. He just lost his top assistant, Damon Stoudemire, who took over the head coaching gig at Georgia Tech. And in a conference with established coaches like Mike Budenholzer, Doc Rivers, Tom Thibodeau, Eric Spoelstra, plus others with more experience than him, like J.B. Bickerstaff and Jacques Vaughn, this is another potential Achilles heel for Boston.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think coaching is something that should be questioned at this time. And I think Coach Mazzulla at this point is kind of backed into a corner, starting to feel that pressure from the fan base, maybe even some of the players questioning, you know, some of the decisions that are being made. And it's not the right time of the season for this to be happening. So you talk about, you know, wanting to peak at the right time. You also want, you know, the team and the fan base to have that confidence around your head coach at the same time. And quite a level of concern, if you ask me, as far as Boston's, you know, doing things down the stretch right now. Of course, the other team I wanted to discuss here, starting to really battle and make things interesting out east, and that is the Philadelphia 76ers. World B, what are you seeing from them?
I see a team whose stars are showing up and playing like stars right now. You know, they've won six in a row, including, you know, beating the Bucks, including beating the Cavaliers the other night. They're one game into a eight-game stretch where seven of the games will be on the road. You know, they close the stretch with games at Phoenix, at Golden State, and at Denver. So we'll know a whole lot more at the end of this road trip. But their stars are playing like stars. You know, Embiid is averaging almost 37 a game in his last seven, shooting over 60%, shooting almost 50% from three. He's just playing like a superstar. And James Harden, we definitely do not talk about him enough. I mentioned him around the All-Star break that I thought he was an All-Star and got a snub there. And it kind of got dismissed, and I understand that. That's fine. You know, the other night against the Pacers, he had 20 assists and one turnover. I mean, that's unbelievable for James Harden to have that kind of number. And he's still getting about 25 a night. He's just – they're really playing well right now, and it's because their stars are doing it. Their offense is right on par with the Kings as far as the best in the league. They have eight straight games with at least 120 of offensive efficiency. That's an insane – you know, that's a really, really good number. And they have the number two offense overall since the break behind only the Kings. So, I mean, there's a lot to like right now about the way the Sixers are playing. It's because their two biggest guys are playing like superstars.
Harden has been amazing this year. And what I really, really kind of appreciate about what he's done is I think he finally realizes he's not Batman anymore. He's Robin now. And this guy was always, even when he was Batman and leading the league in scoring, he was an incredibly good playmaker and a great passer. Now, I really do think he's getting enough buckets to be happy. He's over 20 a game, but he's in a pass-first mode. He's getting good looks for other guys, particularly Embiid. I think a few weeks ago, World B, you might have mentioned something, and I don't remember if I'm getting it exactly right, but that he's setting up Embiid at a higher pace than anybody is setting up any other individual player. So he's really working the screen and roll well, getting Embiid good looks, getting good looks for everybody else. I mean, Tobias Harris is getting good looks. I mean, Tyrese Maxey's getting good looks. And really, it's Harden who's really stirring the drink. And Embiid has benefited more than anybody.
I totally agree there. And the thing that really shocks me here with Philadelphia is you look at their schedule in the month of March as we're midway through the month. They've lost one game, and that was on the road in Dallas. The very next game, they played the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee, and were the team to go ahead and snap that 16-game win streak that Milwaukee had going. Won that one in impressive fashion, 133-130. And, you know, if you ask me, I think the top two teams in the entire NBA peaking at the right time is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't think you can name me one team peaking better right now than those two teams. And much credit has to go to James Harden, like World B said. And, you know, I also think, you know, Joel Embiid's really tightening up this MVP race. I know we're going to discuss that a little bit later on in tonight's show. But, man, you talked about him shooting 50% from the perimeter and what he's been able to do with his scoring outages as well. I think he's really making a significant case here late, especially with Denver starting to tumble for that MVP. And I think it's rightfully deserved. So,
that win you were talking about that they had over the Bucks, it was impressive by itself, but you remember they were down by 15 or 16 points in that game early. And it could have just gone really off the rails because Milwaukee obviously was 18 in a row, was playing out of its mind. And to come back and win that game in Milwaukee that way, you know, it's a long season, so you don't necessarily look at a particular game all the time. Oh, that was the springboard that, you know, lifted them towards these great heights because it's such a long season. But if you want to look at it from Philadelphia's standpoint, that's a big moment for them. And I would imagine it had to fill them up with confidence to come back against the best team in the league in their building, down by as much as they did. So that was more than just a win. It was the way they won that really was impressive for them.
Now, looking ahead just a little bit, sorry, Ross. Just before we hand it to Philadelphia and say they're going to breeze past Boston, you know, we should note that Philly plays 9 of its last 14 games on the road. And the final matchup with Boston is on April 4th. That game is in Philadelphia. And that's a game that Philly's got to have because Boston's beaten them all three times this year. Boston only has 12 games left, 6 at home, 6 on the road, 3 more on this West Coast strip that they're at, Portland, Utah, and Sac. But Philly has been an excellent road team all season. So many of their road games are winnable. Do you guys see Philly catching Boston for number 2? Ross, what do you think?
I do. As I just mentioned, I think, you know, the two top teams peaking in the NBA are the Bucks and the Sixers. World B kind of added on about that big win in Milwaukee. They haven't lost since. They won their next 5 games on their current win streak that they're on right now. They've got Charlotte, Indiana, their next 2 games. So they should pick up 2 more easy ones there. I definitely am a little concerned about the road that you just talked about. But as you mentioned, they are one of the best road teams in the league. So I'm going to say they pass them. But I've been wrong before because I thought the Suns were going to pass the Kings. What about you, World B?
I think if the Celtics get healthy again, which is always a big if with Robert Williams, I think if they get healthy again, they can hold on to that 2 spot. I trust in Joe Mazzulla for obvious reasons. And so I have tolerated this negativity towards him throughout the show, and I can't do it any longer. I'll rest my hopes on the Mountaineer to right the ship. I think it's all about health with them. And they have to shoot better. Their offense is, if it can pick up to where it was first 2-3 months of the season, I think they can hold them off. But you guys make great points, and Philly is the team of the moment. And if you were looking at it objectively, you know, there's no reason to really go against the Sixers at this point, the way they're playing.
Yeah. Well, let's shift our focus here into our second quarter, and let's first talk about the top of the Western Conference. We got the Denver Nuggets fading much like Boston. They're also 5-5 in their last 10 games, and Bruce, I'll start with you. What's your concern level with Joker and the Nuggets?
Well, you know, after that loss in Toronto on Tuesday night, Coach Michael Malone let them have it. I mean, he said they're in cruise control. They lost their edge. He kind of ripped them a new one. And then Thursday night in Detroit, they basically sleepwalked through the first 3 quarters of the game against the Pistons. And then they finally dropped the hammer on them. And, you know, the last, you know, 7-8 minutes of the game ended up winning, going away. So, you know, the Denver fans took their finger just off the panic button, at least for a minute. But I would think in Denver, given how Certainly Sacramento has been, you know, gaining, you know, momentum late in the season. They're another team who's actually peaking at the right time. Out of 11. They did win in Brooklyn on Thursday night. So they've won 10 out of their last 12. So, you know, that's a team that's peaking at the right time too. I don't think they'll catch Denver. Denver has enough of a cushion on them, I think, where they'll hold them off. Yeah. But, you know, once the playoffs begin, it's all a different story. And if I'm Denver, I'm not feeling super confident at the moment. What do you think, World?
I think they're facing, and I think Joker's facing, a lot of pressure towards – I think the coverage of them of late has been resigned to they're going to win the West. But can they do it in the post? They're already questioning whether they can get it done in the postseason. We heard that talk about Joker. He's going to win the third straight MVP, but can he carry his team in the playoffs? And now it's, you know, now that talk's going away, whatever. They just, you know, those before Thursday night's win, which snapped a four-game losing streak, they had a double-digit lead in three of those games and let it get away. With that offense, you don't really expect that to ever happen. And then in Detroit, Toronto, they were never in the game. They never led, down by 24 at one point. So it was just a, you know, bad night all around. But, you know, it was entering the evening, 4.5 over Memphis and Sacramento. And we talked about at the beginning of the season when their offense was really, really good, but their defense was terrible. And they started to get better, gradually get better, get into the upper half of the league in efficiency. They started to look like a team that, wow, if their defense can match their offense even a little bit, what kind of a team do we have? Well, now their defense has fallen off again. It's 125 points per 100 possessions they're allowing in their last four during the losing streak, which was the worst in the league over that stretch. So they have, just like the Celtics, they have a lot of work to do to right the ship. And they have the offense to get it done, just like Boston does. So it's right there for them.
I think the next couple of games on their schedule, in fact, kind of just the end of March here, is going to be the tail of the tape here. They stop me when you hear a bad team that they face here. They got to go to at Knicks, at Nets, at Wizards. They host the Bucks. They host the Wizards. Sixers. Well, I mean, they're still tough, though. They can still surprise a team here or there, and you know they're still kind of trying to hang in there. They got the Pelicans, and then they go to Phoenix. And oh, forgot to mention the last game of the season. If things do get interesting, they keep dropping games, is against Sacramento on April 4th. So that could be an interesting game for the Western Conference standings as well. So they better get their act together. I mean, I'm not going to give them too much praise for beating a Detroit team that was without many of their starters. I mean, the high scorer for Detroit in that game was Rodney Magruder with 20 points, and they almost beat the Denver Nuggets. That's just uncalled for at this point in the season.
Pistons were rocking some green uniforms on Thursday night, too. They were very nice. They looked a lot like those Boston Bill Russell inspired uniforms with kind of the script on it and the three little stars for their three world championships. Those were nice.
Now you just need the talent to go along with the uniforms for you.
The team's kind of green too, right?
Yeah, that's true. you mentioned Denver. You know, their schedule down the stretch. You know, they still have to play the Bucks. They still have to play the 76ers. They still have to play the Warriors. They still have to play Sacramento. But they're all at home at least, so they have that going for them. And then they had the two games at Phoenix, and we don't expect Kevin Durant to be back before the end of the regular season, but who the heck knows anymore, you know, when it comes to injuries. So they have opportunities. It's going to be tough for them, but you think they have enough of a cushion, but they're certainly, if the pressure of answering questions about or dealing with questions about the playoffs, how are you going to do in the playoffs, if they're bad now, how's it going to be when they enter the postseason and they're slumping or they're just blah going into postseason? That's not going to help to put aside any talk about their postseason failures, for lack of a better word.
For sure. And some of those teams you mentioned, like the Warriors and the Suns, I mean, they're going to be playing with a lot more urgency. There's a lot more on the line for them to go ahead and win those games. And so, you know, Denver definitely can't take that lightly. But, Last but not least, before we wrap up this first half here on the 48 Minutes podcast, I think we'd be doing a disservice if we didn't talk about the Memphis Grizzlies once again as they just continue to wobble. And Bruce, I'm going to start with you. You know, what's your take on this Grizzly situation? Of course, now we've kind of got some clarity on how long Ja will be out. And do you see them kind of getting back into gear or not?
Not anytime soon. I mean, this team totally seems to have lost its mojo. I mean, I think it really kind of started, as we've said a number of times, when Steven Adams went out. And then the whole Ja Morant thing, and I know, Russ, you have some thoughts on this. But, yep. I mean, that's created a gigantic mess for Taylor Jenkins and the rest of the team. And all you really need to know about this team and where they're at right now is on Wednesday night, they allowed the worst offensive team in the National Basketball Association, the Miami Heat, averaging 103 points a game, number 30 out of 30 NBA teams. They hung 138 on Memphis. They let Miami shoot almost 60% for the game and 68% on twos. Now, earlier in the day, Morant found out what his suspension was going to be, and he's eligible to return on Monday against Dallas and all that. But I'm not so sure that him returning is going to solve this team's problems. I think they're in a big-time tailspin, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
World B?
Well, you know, we mentioned throughout the season about the ridiculous contrast between the Warriors playing at home and the Warriors playing on the road. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing in Memphis. Memphis is 28-5 at home, and they're 13-22 on the road. I mean, the difference in production and, you know, record-wise is really terrible, and I don't foresee how you're going to win a championship, which is where we had Memphis as a contender, or if not the favorites just a few months ago or a couple months ago in the West. I don't know how you can expect a team that not only can't win on the road, I mean, it's 9 games under for a team that's supposed to be a championship contender. That's not going to cut it for me. So, you know, we talk about the Warriors and their bad home road difference. It's the same thing in Memphis. Until they get that fixed, I don't see them coming out of the West.
Yeah. And my concern that Bruce alluded to here is just kind of what's the vibe like in the locker room? I know we asked Ohm that a few episodes ago, and he was a guest on this show. I've got my questions because I just know in these circumstances, being a big Padres fan, and not to go off script into a different league here, but when Fernando Tatis Jr. came down with the PEDs thing, that really rocked the locker room. I mean, guys were just super disappointed with his decision-making, letting down the team. They were hopeful to get him back. And obviously a little different circumstances here with Ja's suspension, but same deal, right? We're in the last month of the season, the heat of battle, down the final stretch, really trying to peak at the right time. And he goes out and does some really idiotic stuff off the court. I mean, you talk about controllables, and these are things that could have been controlled with just some smarter decision-making. And you know, I think it's going to cost this team in the long haul. I'm with Bruce. I really don't see this team getting it back together this year. I don't know if that locker room camaraderie is going to actually get back to normal as we once knew this young Memphis Grizzlies team to be on the rise with the decisions that their leader and Ja Morant and what he's done in the recent past. I mean, he's definitely got a lot that needs to be said to his teammates and kind of go from there. But I think we're seeing those frustrations, Bruce. You mentioned, you know, Desmond Bain getting tossed from that game the other night and their loss. And I just think there's a lot of frustration behind the scenes. I think the players are doing a pretty good job not going out publicly and addressing those. But I think internally there's some issues still there.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, we'll see if they can get it together. But the way Sacramento's going right now, they're going to leave Memphis in the dust. I mean, Sac, yep. 2 straight road wins on back-to-back. Chicago on Wednesday night, the Nets on Thursday night, 21-13 on the road, best road record in the West. Mini Jokic, I mean, Domantas Sabonis had 24 and 21 on Thursday night. 24 points on 14 field goal attempts. So that team is coming, and I think Mike Brown is just about locked up coach of the year at this point.
And think about this in the West all of a sudden. You know, we've talked about how wild it is at the bottom. But if you're in the Western Conference right now, given what Memphis, the two best teams for the longest time were Memphis and Denver, or Denver-Memphis, whatever you want to let it. And now they're both struggling on the court, off the court, whatever you want to say. And now all of a sudden, here's a Sacramento team that is looking really good, but they haven't made the playoffs in like 16 years. So you talk about playoff, if playoff experience matters at all, well, they don't have it. So now you go down, there's 1, 2, 3 out of the mix. Now you go down to the 4 seed. Now you go down to the 5 seed. Now you go down. It is really open all of a sudden in the West. If you want to look at, break it down like that, just because, you know, Sacramento is looking like the best team all of a sudden in the West. That's just how it is the last month or so, or since the All-Star break at the very least. But they have no experience in this postseason setting. How much is that going to factor in? Can the Warriors suddenly get out of the play-in tournament, get in the stand? How dangerous are they all of a sudden? I counted them out, but how dangerous are they? How dangerous are the, you know, the Clippers that we'll talk about in a little bit? How dangerous are the well, the Mavericks aren't, but how dangerous are the Suns if KD gets healthy? There's a lot going on in the Western Conference all of a sudden because the top teams are struggling.
I will say this about Sac when it comes to playoff experience. They do have guys who have playoff experience, just not together as a group.
Yeah,
correct. I mean, yep.
Harrison Barnes won a championship in Golden State their first year. You know, Kevin Herter's been in the playoffs with Atlanta. You know, so and Mike Brown has coached in the finals and has been on the bench for the finals with Steve Kerr. Yep. How many times? I mean, numerous times. So I would say it's almost like I look at Sacramento when people say, oh, well, their defensive numbers are bad. They give up a lot of points. It's like, well, a lot of that's simply a function of the style that they play. They play at fast pace. You're going to give up points. So I would definitely say if I was – I mean, Ross, one of these weeks on your betting things, you need to do a deep dive on SAC because I think there's
– done deal.
You
know,
I think – because they're one of your favorite teams anyway, right? So you love talking about them. So help us make some money off of those guys. Let's go.
I'm not discounting their I understand what you were saying about the playoff experience, and I think it's all true. They do have guys with the obvious playoff experience and a playoff coach in Mike Brown, but that's just going to be the MO coming into it. And your best players, some of your best players don't have that yet in the deep run. But I agree. I think they have enough guys if they can provide that leadership. They're not coming in. They're not a bunch of freshmen coming into the mix. They're not a bunch of rookies. I mean, there's veterans there that they should be hungry. That town should be crazy if they can get, you know, once they get into the postseason and depending on where they finish. So, no, I don't just write it off. I would just point out it makes for a really wide open Western Conference based off all these factors that we're, you know, talking about.
No doubt. Lots of questions still left unanswered out West and should be a lot of fun seeing how this all plays out. But with that, we've reached our halftime buzzer and we'll take a quick break and come back here for the start of the second half. And we're back with our third quarter, and let's go ahead and focus in on the city of LA, where the Clippers are up and the Lakers are down. And I'll leave it up to you to start us out here. Do you want to start about the up team or the down team?
Well, I can talk about either one, but we'll talk about the Clippers first because we're all about positivity on 48 minutes. We're all about that. A nice run by them. You know, they started 0-5 since the All-Star break, and now they've won 4 in a row. Their offense is really clicking all of a sudden in their last 4. They're 123 points per 100 possessions. That's excellent efficiency. They're shooting almost 60% effective field goal percentage. That tells me they're hitting the threes as well as hitting from the twos. And for me, it's all about Kawhi Leonard being healthy. He has been huge since he's been able to be healthy.
Yep.
And there's only two other players since the middle of December that is shooting better from 3-point range. It's Jalen Brunson and somebody else. I can't think of it right now. But Kawhi is third for like 46%. And the big key for him, you can tell how healthy he is now. He's shooting the pull-up jumper from 3-point range, and he's making about 46% of them over the last 3 months or whatever. That's a huge thing. So you know, he's obviously a great defender. So you put that together with his offense, And there's a lot to like all of a sudden about the Clippers.
They overcame a 50-burger from Steph Curry on Wednesday night. Interestingly, Steph has two 50-point games this year. Both of them were on the road. Both of them were losses. Yeah. So just a random fact that means probably not a whole lot. But, you know, usually when Steph Curry gets it going like that, he carries the Warriors to a win, except for this year, I suppose. The Clips have added a bunch of talent. I mean, and Ty Lue's done a really good job kind of integrating everybody. I mean, you brought in Russell Westbrook. You brought in Mason Plumlee, Eric Gordon, Bones Highland, who hasn't even really played in almost 2 weeks. But Ty has done a great job, you know, kind of having, as we've said a couple times, training camp halfway through the season. And interestingly, Russ in this four-game winning streak is averaging fewer than 10 points a game, okay? Not putting up numbers at all, not even really playing huge minutes, but clearly somehow or another he's contributing because they're winning the games and you know, he's been a part of that. You know, Kawhi, as you said, and Paul George have provided the scoring, the defense, the leadership. So, and they're also a pretty good road team. They're 18-18. So, you know, that to me is a recipe for, you know, further upward motion. I mean, they could even end up getting home court in the first round if they can, you know, run down Phoenix. Ross, what do you think about the Clips?
Well, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to know that, you know, with this Clippers team, it all starts and ends with Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, as Will B had mentioned, I mean, he's playing fantastic basketball here as of late. And I think he's been the biggest reason why we now see this team soaring and winning ball games consistently. If Kawhi plays consistent basketball, that team's going to be tough to stop. Paul George hasn't really skipped a beat. I think he's done a great job, you know, meshing with Kawhi this year and even giving him more opportunities to be the guy. I think Kawhi is PG is more than willing to take a back seat. He had mentioned that on a JJ Redick podcast here recently that, you know, he's fine being the number two or number three man if it means to win. And, you know, he certainly seems committed to that. And he's doing a heck of a job kind of being second fiddle there now, you know, passing the ball off to Kawhi. And then the other thing is, you know, Tyronn Lue has now had about 10 games where he's had two healthy centers in Zubac and Plumlee, both that bring a different type of, you know, perspective to their games. You know, you got Zubac, more of the big banger type guy, and you got Plumlee, who's, you know, an underrated passer, super active on both ends of the glass and can run the floor extremely well. So it gives them two different looks at the center position that's been established. I think Norman Powell being out, weirdly enough, as much as I'm a Powell fan, has kind of simplified things as far as the rotation's concerned off the bench. I mean, we're seeing the minutes now going to Eric Gordon, who had a fantastic game on Wednesday night in their victory over the Warriors. Played 27 minutes, 16 points on 5 of 11 shooting. And Terrence Mann, you know, we got a question from one of our smart listeners for Ohm about how he fits into this, you know, equation in L.A. And he's continued to play well off the bench as well, providing that defensive length and also some scoring. He had 17 in their last game, and he's shooting the ball a little bit better from the perimeter. So they're starting to click as a unit. But again, it all starts with getting Kawhi inserted in there on a nightly basis and kind of making sure you can adapt around Kawhi. And I think they're starting to do that at a much better level. And then on the flip side, do you guys want to talk about the Lakers?
Oh, no, Bruce? Yeah, I was just going to grab it and go because
go for it.
Here's the deal. Far be it from me to tell Darvin Ham how to do his job. But I don't understand why Anthony Davis couldn't play against Houston on Wednesday. Yes, it was a back-to-back, but losing a four-point game to the Rockets meant the team is now in 10th place. Had they won that game, which I think if Anthony Davis would have played, they probably would have won that game, they'd be at 500, which is a big, significant goal, and in a tie for 7th. So they're in 10th instead of 7th. It's like, I understand load management. I really do. But I also understand that it's time to keep your foot on the gas if you're the Lakers, especially with LeBron James still out. Suck it up and give him what you can. Give him something, AD. And Darvin Ham, I put this on you, too. You got to tell that guy, Load management's off the door tonight. We need this win.
Yeah, I think at the very least, if you're Darvin Ham, you try to negotiate with AD and be like, look, I know you're not 100% right now. Give me 20 minutes, all right? Something, you know? It's like, I'll start you out, play the first 6-7 minutes to start the game, come out, play 4-5 in the second quarter, and then we're really going to try to, you know, save you for that fourth quarter. Hopefully we can keep it close, and then you can finish the job. But to downright not play in that game and with what's on the line for this Lakers team, I would be frustrated if I was a Lakers fan, and heated if I was, hoping this team made the playoffs. And I wonder what LeBron James would have to say about that. But, yeah, I was blown away that AD sat this one out. I think this is a game they definitely would have won, one that they needed when you look at their schedule. And just downright disappointed that Anthony Davis didn't give it a go. Will be?
Well, clearly they didn't take the Rockets seriously that night. I mean, if the Nuggets are in town, they should have. Really think they absolutely should have. You should take everybody seriously at this. Like, who are the Lakers to not take anybody seriously at this point in the season?
They just beat the Celtics though too. Absolutely. Like, it's like, I mean, yeah, isn't that an indicator? Totally. Like, hey, we got to show up.
Totally, because you know if the Nuggets are in town, or the Kings are in town, AD's figuring out a way to get on the court, but it was the Rockets, and I don't think they looked at it as here's an opportunity to rest them, and now you got egg on your face because you imagine not making the postseason for one win, which is very realistic. They're in a blah state, just like these other teams we mentioned that are struggling. 5-4 their last nine, which is they're over 500. That's great, but they need to go on a run. They need to get 6-3, 7-2. They need to get one on each run. I mean, they win at Oklahoma City. You think they got some momentum? Then they lose at home to Minnesota. Then they don't get a win at New Orleans. You think they got some momentum? And then they lose at Houston the next night. You got to get something out. You got to get some run going, and they just haven't been able to do it. Now they have an opportunity coming up, 5-game homestand, and you got the Mavericks, you got the Magic, you got the Suns, you got the Oklahoma City again, and you got the Bulls. They need to go 4-1 in that 5-game stretch to really solidify themselves as a contender. Otherwise, the rest of the season is going to be just up and down, and it's going to be anxiety for them and the fans.
The Lakers are playing with fire. If they settle for finishing in the top 10 and expecting they can flip the switch and win 2 games in the play-in round to grab the 8th spot, they may well do it. And they only have one more back-to-back the rest of the way. So maybe this was AD's last night off, okay? Because their final back-to-back game is against the Clippers on April 5th. So I think it's time to take that load management thing and tell AD, you know what? You're a $40 million player. And if you're not going to play now, when are you going to play?
Right. Yeah, you might not have to play. They might not even be in it. I'm with you there. But just going back to wrap this one up, I think – you know, the Lakers, having just known that the Rockets had beat the Celtics, you don't think the Rockets are on a high beating the Eastern Conference champs of last year, a team that's atop amongst the top of the East, and to go out there and lay an egg just doesn't make sense. I mean, that would be my first point in my pregame talk to the team. Hey, this team just beat Boston. We can't take them lightly. They're going to come out feeling really good about themselves, and we got to punch them first. And that didn't happen, and they're going to pay a price for that.
And by the way, I mentioned how I think they absolutely have to go 4-1 in this upcoming 5-game homestand. And one of the reasons is after that they got a 5-game road trip. How do you go 3-2 at home, and then go on the road? And if you're the Lakers, just expect to somehow figure out, get some momentum that way. This is their opportunity right here, these next 5 games, to really solidify themselves and make some noise that, hey, we're in it to get to the postseason. We're in it to get either – it's not even the play-in tournament. They get on a nice run. They can still get in the playoff mix. I don't think it's going to happen given what they've done all season, but it's there for them.
Yep, no question about it. And heading into our fourth quarter here, let's talk a little bit about the MVP race as that starts to tighten. And, Bruce, I'll start with you.
Well, for most of the season, the two leading MVP candidates were Jason Tatum of the Celtics and Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets. but lately their teams have cooled off, and so has Tatum's chance of winning the award. He's done. He is not going to win the MVP award unless the Celtics run off 12 straight wins to finish off the season and he averages, you know, a bunch of points. But I don't think that's happening. So it appears that Giannis and Joel Embiid have kind of joined Joker in a three-man race for the award. How interesting is it that the top three MVP candidates are all bigs and they're all international players? I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it just shows you just how strong the game is around the world these days. I'm actually a big fan of it, even though I'm American. I think it's great that the game has grown so well, and we've got these international stars that have become quite entertaining acts on a night-to-night basis. And at this point in time, my preseason pick to win MVP was Joel Embiid. And I'm quite curious. I think he's got a legit shot to win it. I mean, I've mentioned voter fatigue on this show before. You know, Giannis won back-to-back. Joker has two in a row himself here. Could he win a third? He could, for sure, but they've started to stumble. I'm starting to think if I was a betting man, I might take Joel Embiid to win this award. I mean, what he's got Philly doing, as we discussed earlier on tonight's show, has been quite incredible, and he's missed out on a couple opportunities to be crowned MVP in the past. So maybe this is finally the year he wins one. Worldby, what do you think?
Well, according to an article on ESPN today, ESPN.com, according to Caesars Sportsbook, the odds are now even between Joker and MD. They're both at minus 110 to win the MVP. Giannis is plus 300, which is pretty decent value if you're looking for value. But, yeah, it's really gotten tight. And this is an award that's got – MD is playing really great. We talked about it at the top of the show. There's nothing to take away from him. He's been the Eastern Conference Player of the Year in January. He was Eastern Conference Player of the Month. I said Player of the Year. Player of the Month in February. He's looking like he's going to get it in March. I mean, he's really – I meant January and February. I meant December and January, excuse me, on MDs. But this is an award. This is where Joker has had it, and he's letting it get away from him, because the team is struggling. As great as Embiid is playing, and is, I love it. I love the controversy, or whatever you want to call it, the race, the debate, if you will, about these three. This was Joker's award two weeks ago. It was his award. And now, if you listen to the chatter, they're going into a little bit of a slump. They just snapped a four-game losing streak Thursday. And their defense is playing bad, and that's reflecting on Joker. Now it's a look at, well, is Joker's defense costing them games? Is he a liability on defense? It's no longer. He's still averaging a triple double. Everybody, I mean, he's going to be the first center. He's on pace to be the first center to average a triple double, but it may not be enough. Embiid is playing great, like we said. But this award. If Jokic doesn't win it, it's on him. It's not on anybody else, no matter how well everybody else is playing.
Let me give you a number about Embiid that might make you scratch your head just a little bit as we continue this discussion. When Joker misses games, he's missed eight games. The Nuggets are 3-5 when he's not in the lineup. When Giannis misses games, he's missed 15. They're 9-6 without him, okay, which is, you know, pretty good. When Embiid misses games, they're 9-4 without him, which is actually a better winning percentage than when he does play. Granted, it's real close. It's like 67% versus 69, but I'm saying it's virtually the same. Now, am I saying that they're better without Embiid? Of course I'm not saying they're better without Embiid. But Embiid, I believe, will finish second in the MVP voting. I think it's going to go to Giannis, and I think the thing that's going to tip it in his favor is that he is – going to probably be on the team that has the best overall record, okay? And that team had a lot of injuries this year, including him, but certainly, you know, with Middleton out and you know, Bobby Portis missing a lot of time. He just carried that team, you know. And I think because of that, again, he's tied with second with Joker in rebounds, okay? He's averaging, you know, almost 32 points a game, you know, number four in the league. And I think the determining factor to me is that they're going to end up with the best record. So I think it's going to be Embiid or Giannis number one, Embiid number two, and Joker number three. And after that, you know, maybe Tatum. I don't know. Someone else could sneak in there too.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't disagree. I think obviously Giannis has a big case there too. And I like the value World B talked about at the sportsbooks plus 300 for Giannis to go ahead and win that award. But again, if we look at this just with the guys that are minus 110 right now and just Joker and Embiid, I mean, right now Philly has just a percentage higher win total than Denver. They've played a few more games, but have a better winning percentage this season. And if we're going to talk about who's had a tougher division or conference, I should say, is it Philly in the Eastern Conference, which has been pretty consistent for the most part, or is it the West, which has been extremely wild, as we've talked about? I mean, Phoenix hasn't been as good as they thought they were going to be. Clippers definitely haven't been as good as we thought they would be. Warriors, I mean, you keep going down the list. If we're looking at just those two guys as an Embiid and Joker, I'd say Embiid's had the tougher road. So I think we need to keep that into consideration as well. But
here's something else to keep in mind about Denver and Joker too. And I've mentioned this throughout our podcast in different episodes, the value he brings to that Nuggets team. Denver averages 22 points per 100 possessions more when he is on the court than when he is off the court. It's a ridiculous number in any circumstance, but when you consider the Nuggets are one of the best teams in the league and you have that big a disparity between your best player on and off the court, there's nowhere even close in the league that has that big a gap for one player on court, off court, in offensive efficiency. It's an amazing number. It's been that way throughout, even during this period where they're struggling. He is still the most value in terms of value. He is still the most valuable player to me in the league. Now, does he have all the overall? He does have the overall numbers, but I think you make a good point, Ross, about the voter fatigue, about three-time MVP and stuff. And indeed, if he were to win it, or Giannis, it's not like they would steal the award from him. They would earn it.
No,
there's a lot of a lot of points to be made in their favor. But I think at the end of the day, the value of Joker on that team still remains.
Yep. Should be interesting to see how that plays out. And with that, let's talk about some more betting here on tonight's show with my best bets section. And tonight I'm going to share my favorite Clippers same game parlay. And it's seven legs. It starts with Kawhi Leonard scoring 20 points, which he has done in eight straight games. Kawhi hitting 2 3-pointers in the game. And he's done that in four of the past five games. Kawhi having 2 assists, always a lock there. Paul George having 18 points. George has actually scored 20-plus in each of the past six games. Paul George having 2 assists, much like Kawhi with the assist total. That's pretty much a lock. And then Paul George with 2 3-pointers. He's hit at least 2 threes in each of the last five games. And then lastly, as my cherry on top, Mason Plumlee for 5 rebounds. Coming off the bench, high activity guy. Easy guy that should get at least 5 rebounds in a game to help add some value and get you into the plus odds there. So that's tonight's best bets section. And with that, we'll get right into our final thought. And Bruce, we'll start with you.
Thanks, Ross. I've talked about this before, but I want to kind of talk about it just one more time. Some franchises have a way of sucking over a long period of time. The Clippers missed the playoffs 30 times in 34 seasons between 1977 and 2010. Prior to this year, Sacramento missed the playoffs 17 straight seasons. And then we have the San Antonio Spurs. They're about to miss the playoffs for the fourth straight season, which is a crazy long drought in their franchise. And while the team was competitive in the previous three seasons where they missed the playoffs, their win total was in the 30s, whatever. This year was a tankathon from the get-go. Prior to the season, they traded All-Star guard DeJounte Murray to Atlanta. They sent Jakob Poeltl packing before the trade deadline in February. They're solidly in the bottom three among the NBA's worst teams, which puts them on equal footing with Houston and Detroit to win the draft lottery and select Victor Wembanyama. It remains to be seen if the ping pong balls will bounce their way, but they tanked two other times hoping to get the top overall pick, and it worked both times. In 1987, they lost 25 of their last 35 games and lucked out in the lottery, and they got Hall of Famer David Robinson with the number one overall pick. After he did his stint in the Navy, he resurrected their franchise, which set them on a course to eventually, you know, win big. In 96-97, they lost Robinson after six games to an injury, and then they just tanked it from there, and they went 20-62. And yes, they lucked out again in the lottery. This time they got Tim Duncan, number one overall. Five NBA championships followed, yada, yada, yada. We know that story. So here we are in 2023, and the Spurs are circling the drain, hoping to lose their way to victory. Will they be sucky and lucky again? Sucky and lucky. I love that. Will they be sucky and lucky again? I guess we'll find out on May 16th, World B.
Will B, what do you got for a final thought?
Thank you, guys. Well, I'm going to channel my inner Mountaineer self here. on Thursday, my alma mater lost a heartbreaker to Maryland in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And while it was disappointing, they still had a very good season. And I wanted to point out to any Mountaineer fans that are out there listening that there is still a big a connection, so at least since Jerry West left, with West Virginia in the NBA these days. And it appears both in terms on the court with Javon Carter being a key reserve on the Milwaukee Bucks. And it was Ross Geiger's top point guard reserve a couple episodes ago. I haven't forgotten that. Deuce McBride of the Knicks is another key reserve on the Knickerbocker during the run. And on Tuesday had his career high 18 points in a win over the Blazers. If you want to look at coaches, Joe Mazzulla is leading the team with the second-best record in the league, and the Celtics is also being the youngest coach in the league. And then in the front office, you have a gentleman by the name of Mike Gansey, former Mountaineer, who is the GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers, former G League Executive of the Year with the Cleveland Charge, who has been a key member of the Cavaliers' rise into serious contention in the Eastern Conference. So it's a good time. While today's not a great day, Thursday's not a great day to be a Mountaineer, overall, in terms of basketball, there's a lot to be happy about if you're a Mountaineer fan, which obviously I am.
And it could be worse, World B. You could be an Arizona Wildcat fan today. So,
absolutely good point.
Well, for my final thought, I wanted to talk a little bit more about St. Patrick's Day in the uniforms. Bruce had hinted about it with the Pistons uniform the other night, but my favorite uniform has always been the Chicago Bulls in their green uniforms. And I'm not even a Bulls fan. The Bulls, more than any other team in the league, are known for their red uniforms, but they'll be full green when they host the Minnesota Timberwolves tomorrow night. And we will be treated to those bright green uniforms once again. And the Chicago's river will be dyed green. And not too many other cities, I must mention, party quite like the city of Chicago on St. Patty's Day. So we want to wish all our listeners a happy St. Patrick's Day. Make sure you celebrate responsibly and stay safe. And for that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Happy St. Patty's Day, y'all.